I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser are here with me in the studio, and so is Colin Jeffrey. For the showbiz segment of our show, there are a few movies hitting the screens this week. Before we talk about this week's movie, I give you great congratulations for your prediction on Ben-Hur last weekend, which we neither of us saw because we both knew it was going to be a disaster. And you said, it'll pull in $10 or $11 million. And I said, really? On a $100 million budget, it's only going to make $10 or $11 million? It made $11.1 million last weekend. How about this guy right here, showbiz boy, Colin Jeffrey?
Right. Wow, Mr. Predictor.
If only I could do it with the stock. Something that matters. If only I could do it with something that would make me money.
Well, you know, Hollywood probably needs people who make these market projections. Oh, they already have them.
I bet there are prop bets on this stuff. I got to investigate that.
It's probably going to probably go to Bovada or some website like that, and you can, if it were legal to bet on it, we would never do it if it were.
No, play money.
Yeah.
If I'm not here next week, though.
So what's going to be the big movie this weekend?
I think something will finally unseat Suicide Squad, which will be, I guess, good. There's not a giant, giant blockbuster this week.
We're stuck in the middle of August, which is second only to February for the time when movies that aren't that good kind of get dumped, right?
Right, but there's at least one good movie out this week.
Okay, must be the one you saw.
Well, then I guess yes, it is.
Go ahead.
So I saw we're going to call it a thriller more so than anything, called Don't Breathe. It centers around the story of a group of young criminals. They break into houses and then rob people, but they have sort of rules. They don't take cash. They keep the total take under a certain amount, and it's so that it's not grand larceny. They're sort of small time criminals, but still not the best people. One of the crew of three, his father works for a security company, and they rob people that work for his father's company.
And nobody makes that connection?
No.
Of course not.
I mean, it's a big security company. It'd be like an ADT company. It just so happens his dad works for them.
Just coincidental.
But again, there's small burglaries, so the police probably aren't paying too much attention to it. This is a movie that has a pretty good groundwork, but if you start to think about it too hard, it falls apart a little bit.
Okay.
But it's fun in spite of that.
All right.
Our main character. This is the woman we really care about. Jane Levy plays one of the trio of thieves, and her character actually is sort of the most sympathetic. She's doesn't have the best family life, and as a child was maltreated. Her mom used to lock her in the trunk of their car because parents do that, I guess, when they're really frustrated and can't deal with a kid. And now she is in this house in which her mother is dating. And I loved this. Like, I love when characters are just on their face. You look at them and you can tell, no, this guy's worthless. Her mother's boyfriend actually has like a giant swastika tattooed on his arm. Like, they don't even hide it. So it's just like, oh, clearly he's not a good guy and doesn't treat her well. She's taking care of her younger sister. And she says, oh, we're going to go to California sometime. Well, the opportunity presents itself. They can have one last score, and they can all retire from thieving, but it will require them to break one of the rules.
Okay, let me just ask you a question. I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
You're fine.
In the history of movies, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a gang of robbers or con men or thieves of one kind or another, criminals of one kind or another, who have been together for a while. And one of the members, or maybe several of the members, have said, you know what, I got to get out of this. We have enough money. We've done fine. We got to get out of this. And so they decide they're not going to do it anymore. But then an outsider comes in and either forces them or asks them to make the biggest haul of their lives. And they can't resist. There must be 100 movies with this plot.
Yes.
So is that what happens here?
Sort of, yeah.
We're out of it. We can't do it anymore. All right, we'll do one more. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen.
Well, the fence that they go to take all of their goods to says, hey, there's this guy. His daughter was hit and killed by another young driver, a young woman, and they settled a lawsuit with him. And he got $300,000. So it's not an astronomical sum of money, but it's enough for Jane Levy and her character to get away, to take her younger sister and get away from all of this. So
we can finally put all of this behind us. We'll just do this one last one.
Exactly. So they say, you know what? They convince everyone to do it. Well, this man lives in, it takes place in Detroit. He lives on a street in Detroit that has been neglected. He's the last house with a resident.
Big Beaver Road, exit 69.
Dan knows Detroit pretty well.
Yeah, that's in Detroit.
So they...
It's not in the Grosse Pointe neighborhood.
No.
Maybe it's along 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Look at me showing off my Detroit.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Grosse Pointe is very nice.
You can learn that from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could learn that from Slim Shady, though.
That's right. That's how I know about 8 Mile Road and Grosse Pointe. I know because of a John Cusack movie.
Yeah.
What do you want from me? He's the one who's been there, not me, Mr. Hockey over here.
I know.
Now back to Colin on his review, already in progress.
So he is secluded. He's a good mark in that sense. And he's an even better mark because he was in, I believe they say, the Iraq War and lost his eyesight. He can't see, so he's blind. So should be easy, no problem. He's a shut-in. No one's going to check on him.
This will be like stealing from a blind man.
Exactly. Well, things don't go as planned.
Okay.
Because this is... I've given you quite a bit of lead up because it's difficult to tell you a lot about a thriller when the stuff starts happening.
Okay.
And so I don't want to get too into it other than to say they uncover secrets about this man. All is not as it seems, of course. And they play when you hear blind man is going to have to defend his house from these robbers. What do you think the situation will arise that sort of evens the playing field?
Well, there was a movie many, many years ago with Alan Arkin and Audrey Hepburn. I can't remember the name of it. If my wife is listening, she will text me the title of it right now, or you can look it up at IMDb, in which she plays a blind woman and a guy...
Wait Until Dark.
Thank you. And the guy gets into the room and is obviously going to do some evil things to her, and so she turns off the lights.
Yes.
That he has turned on. She doesn't need the lights. She's blind. And so she levels the playing field. I'm guessing that's what happens in this.
That's exactly what happens. And ordinarily, when we see in movies this lights off, it goes to night vision and everything turns green. That removes some of the suspense.
Yep.
So instead, what they do in this is they, in post-production... They must have opened the apertures as widely as possible on these cameras to let in all the light they could. And then in post-production, just boosted the contrast because you can just barely see. But it's not green. It's not that night vision. It looks. That makes it scarier. It makes it feel more realistic.
Wow, it's probably intense.
It's so good. And this movie does that so well. It's very, very tense.
Now, I got to tell you, when I heard Don't Breathe as a title, I thought, oh, what is it? Six teenagers go and they get into an old house and they get stuck in there and then the demons come out and it turns into a horror movie. Sounds like that's not what it is. This sounds like it's not a horror movie.
Well, it could be, but I think it's more a thriller. And Don't Breathe, it's a great name for it because if a blind man can't see you, what can he do? He can smell you or he can hear you. Well, if you're panicked, you're so don't breathe. It's just a tight little thriller. It works very nicely in 90 minutes. It has a great villain. And we talk about they must have a good villain. Stephen Lang plays the villain. This is a character actor. You've seen him. When you see him on there, you will recognize him.
I know that guy.
Yes.
Yeah, one of those.
Stephen Lang makes a great heavy in this. There's enough reveals that it works very nicely the entire way through. You're kept sort of guessing. And another thing I want to mention in thrillers and in horror movies is talking about the preservation of resources. And by that, I mean in a bad horror movie or thriller, a crucial moment arrives and all of a sudden there's a knife out of nowhere in an inexplicable location underneath the bed. There's a knife. Yeah. Oh, thank goodness this knife was here.
Yeah.
This does not have that. And if you see something, it's going to come up again. And if something is not directly taken care of, odds are it will be back. Everything that happens makes sense. You're never left with that. Where'd that come from?
Mm.
It makes... And when they're out of those items, the movie's over. Mm-hmm. And you're like, it makes sense from a perspective like that.
Right. Sounds like you really liked this.
I really enjoyed it. The biggest drawback is you're going to get out and you're going to try and do that post-mortem with a friend. And you're going to be talking and you're like, well, that didn't make sense. Oh, that didn't make much sense. Stop doing that. Just enjoy the fact that it's a decent movie in August. It's fun. It feels like sort of a summer thriller.
Hmm.
It's very nice. It moves along quickly. And I want to say it's like 88 minutes. I give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. 7 out of 10 for Don't Breathe, which is opening around the St. Louis area today. One of the other, and will that be the winner this weekend, you think?
I think it's going to unseat Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Finally, after like 4 weeks.
All right. The movie that I saw is called Equity, which stars Anna Gunn, who, if you watch Breaking Bad, you'll remember as Skyler White, Walter White's wife through that series. Just a little side note before I tell you about Equity. Anna Gunn went through a very, very rough time in the last year or so of that show, because by then, all the people who had heard about the show but hadn't been watching it on TV had caught up with it via Netflix and had binge-watched it and had seen all of this stuff that goes on in the show. And even though Walter White is an anti-hero, because he's really a villain and a bad guy who does some horrible things during the series, she's the wife who people said treated him wrong or got in his way, and people really got vitriolic about the Skyler White character. Remember we talked about this at the time?
Yeah.
And they took it out on Anna Gunn, the actress. Like it was her fault that she was playing this woman who really had not done anything bad to her husband. She was putting up with a methamphetamine dealer who was lying to her all the time as a husband. But people came out, and she actually had to write an op-ed, I think it was in the New York Times, about how, you know, you have to be able to separate character from person. And by the way, you have no reason to be upset with the character. So why? She was getting Twitter bombed and internet hate mail and death threats. Absolutely ridiculous for an actress who's playing a fictional character. Now, that said, she is finally back in something, because I haven't seen her in anything since Breaking Bad. Have you even heard of her in any other project?
No.
Because I wonder if that backlash kept her from getting more roles, or if she just decided after Breaking Bad to take a year or two off. I don't know. But she's back now in this movie called Equity, in which she plays Naomi Bishop, who is an investment banker at a Wall Street firm who specializes in guiding Silicon Valley tech startups through their IPO, their initial public offering on Wall Street. She is involved with a guy named Michael, who is a broker in the same huge firm, but the two sides of that firm are not supposed to have business contact. So they're supposed to have erected a virtual firewall between them. Well, here's a couple that works on each side of the firewall. And are they talking about stuff or aren't they talking about stuff? Are they crossing the line into what would be called insider trading? That's part of the intrigue, which also involves Naomi's assistant and an old friend of hers who works at the Department of Justice now and is investigating financial crimes like insider trading. This movie was written and directed and produced by women. All of the lead characters, except for this guy who she works with, all of them are women. It shows life inside a Wall Street firm where you do bump into that glass ceiling. One of the characters is pregnant, but she also wants a promotion, and her boss knows that she's pregnant, and is that going to get in the way of her getting that promotion? That's a real-life situation that women here and all across the country, all across the world, face on a regular basis. So it has knowledge of that sort of stuff. There's also a little bit of an echo of Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, because Naomi, the Anna Gunn character, at one point is talking to a room full of women who are trying to get into business and maybe work on Wall Street. They're at a conference or something like that. And she gives a speech about how she likes money. It's almost like the greed is good speech. She likes money. She likes it not just because it can pay for things like her younger brother's education or beautiful diamond earrings for herself, but because numbers fascinate her and the financial world is a game that she loves to play, and money is power, and she loves it in that way. It's a really good speech, and Anna Gunn delivers it really, really well. She's a good character, and she's good as that character, but the story slogs down in the middle. And if you haven't seen The Big Short or the series Billions on Showtime, where you're following all this financially dense stuff in the plot, you might be a little bit confused. I will be honest with you. I walked out of there. I was not 100% sure what had happened or what had gone wrong or what had gone right in that particular deal that we see going on in this movie. There is a reason that this movie debuted at Sundance in January and got an ecstatic reaction, which I wouldn't give it, but they gave it to her, to the movie makers at Sundance in January. But the reason it hasn't, there's a reason it's coming out in the middle of August. And that's because it just misses. It's got good performances. It's got an interesting plot. It has interesting things to say about women in the workplace and that glass ceiling. But it just, in the end, doesn't complete the circle. And so I kind of, I don't know if I want to give it a 5, or I'll be generous, I'll give it a 6 out of 10. It's called Equity. It's not going to be playing in a ton of theaters. Might be an art house movie here in St. Louis, but I think it's probably only going to be around for a couple of weeks, and then maybe it'll have a life on demand and streaming later on. But it's more typical of the kind of movies that you end up with this month, which are kind of like, all right, well, what do you want to do for dinner? You know, there's nothing much to say about what you've just seen, mm-hmm. other than the things that I just went over. So there are your two movie reviews for this week. Don't Breathe gets a 7, and Equity gets a 6. We do these on a scale of 10. Is anything else opening up this weekend that'll have any kind of impact?
Nothing worthwhile.
Okay.
Nothing big. Not to say there might not be a good movie, but no.
No Ben-Hur level bombs?
No.
All right.
We're just calm weekend.
Okay. Well, we're heading towards Labor Day, and then things will kick in with a lot more movies coming. I'm really looking forward to Sully with Tom Hanks playing Sully Sullenberger, the guy who landed the U.S. Airways plane on the Hudson after they had the engine trouble. That's in like 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks, yeah. Next week, I believe we will both likely be reviewing The Light Between the Oceans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll be reviewing that.
Yes, we will. But when we come back, we have other stuff to get to in the showbiz realm, so stand by. It's the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss, and Colin Jeffrey. It's the showbiz portion of the show. A few months ago, I talked to a guy by the name of Dan Stedman, who has directed a few movies in this area, locally made movies starring local people. There was one that was called Belleville, and the latest one was called Proximity. And it starred Adam Wainwright of the Cardinals. And it was a nice conversation I had with Dan on the air. And he said, you know, right now it's available on video, but we're hoping to get it into theaters. And next weekend, it is going to be showing in 4 Werenberg theaters. Chesterfield Galaxy, Ronnie's Cine, Mid Rivers, and the Werenberg in O'Fallon, Illinois. They're going to be playing it next weekend. And at those screenings, or before those screenings, rather, they're going to be doing auditions for people who might want to be in a movie themselves. It's going to be an open casting call for both adults and kids. Children under 18 do have to be accompanied by a parent. Tom Oldcroft is a guy I've known for a few years. He appeared in the movie Proximity, and he'll be acting as the casting director at the Mid Rivers Mall movie theater when they do this. It's going to be next Friday, the September 2nd, and Saturday, September 3rd. So it's Labor Day weekend, Friday and Saturday, from 5 to 8 p.m. at all 4 of those movie theaters. Now, if you want to be in a movie, I'm not kidding about this. This is your chance to get into a movie made right here in the St. Louis area, like all of these people have done it. Lots of people have gotten speaking roles and starring roles and roles as extras in these movies. If you want to do it, you should work up a monologue that's about 2 minutes long. Don't plan on going in there and giving them a big, long speech. Just a couple of minutes of a monologue. Or you can go to their website, which is circa87.com. They have one prepared on there. You can download that from the website, kind of memorize that, and then go in there and give it your best. They say that they are looking for authenticity and believability. You don't have to be perfect about memorizing it. As long as you convey the dialogue, you can embellish it. They want you to make it your own so that you're comfortable with it. They'll also have copies of these monologues they hand out at the movie theaters next week. And so if you are going to go see proximity at one of these four movie theaters to see Adam Wainwright in his motion picture debut, and as well as a whole bunch of local actors from this area, from the Bi-State. If you're going to go see the movie next weekend, that theater is where they're going to be doing these auditions. And if you're in line for the movie and it's time for the movie to start, they'll say, okay, we'll expedite you through the audition process because it only takes a few minutes. They'll bring you in so you can go in and see your movie.
Cool.
So it's pretty decent chance for you to get in there. I know Dan and I both enjoyed our major motion picture experiences.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Dan was in Up in the Air, and I was in Mississippi Grind.
Mm-hmm.
And here's your chance to be in a new one. I don't know if Dan Stedman is going to be writing and directing this one, but the company is called Circa 87, and they're serious about using people from this area and putting them in the movies.
So I shouldn't do the USS Indianapolis speech from Jaws. I think that's about 4 minutes, right?
No, you got to cut that down.
Got to cut that.
Got to cut that down.
Oh, that's good.
That's one of the greats.
That is a great monologue. Is it really 4 minutes long?
I think it's about 4 minutes. The way he delivers it, I mean, why would you ever try and do it that way?
When they're sitting there comparing
scars and stuff.
And
it tells the story about it being in the water with the sharks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the next morning.
Robert Shaw was great.
Oh, yes, he was.
So, again, it's going to be at four movie theaters next weekend. Chesterfield Galaxy, Ronnie's, Mid-Rivers, O'Fallon, next Friday and Saturday from 5 until 8 p.m. There's a chance for you to get into the movies. A couple of weeks ago on this show, I spoke with Bobcat Goldthwait. I think we all agreed. Great time with him.
Yes.
Wonderful guy.
Yes.
I have the audio up on my website, and people from all over the world are discovering this. I can find out where in the world people are downloading stuff on my website. I did not know there was a country called Mauritania or Mauritius. I can't remember which it is.
Wow.
Starts with M-A-U-R. That's how.
Really?
Yeah. I never heard of that. Somebody there found out about the... Either that or they're hacking into my website. One of the
wow.
two. It is way, way, way the number one download of any interview that we've done this year. So it's on there. And speaking of Bobcat, the movie that he made about a guy by the name of Barry Simmons, who was a comedian and ran comedy clubs and was a comedy mentor to Bobcat and a lot of other people who started in the business at that time in the early 80s. He made a movie about this guy because in addition to all of that stuff, Barry Crimmins is a survivor of priest abuse. And there's a documentary about him called Call Me Lucky, which I talked to Bobcat on the air. And then I mentioned strongly that you go out and take a look at it. And you've seen it, right, Ian?
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
It's very well done. Powerful story.
Did you tell Frank about it?
He did, yes. And he ended up watching it, too, and said the same thing.
Yeah, it is remarkable. I mention it today because, as of today, it is both on iTunes and streaming on Netflix. So if you have Netflix and you want to see it, it's terrific. When you hear Bobcat Goldthwait, you probably think of that old voice from the Police Academy movies and you think it's going to be wacky. That's not this. This is a documentary about this guy, Barry Crimmins. Bobcat appears in it, and so do a lot of other people who are from that era, Bob Saget and a few other comedians who you might recognize.
Bob Saget, who, by the way, is one of the most filthiest comics out there, and you wouldn't even think that because of his Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos. The first time I saw him do stand-up, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people were shocked by that. Here's the interesting thing about that. He was that way before he started doing these family-friendly, wholesome shows.
Yeah.
And
which surprises me that they hired him to do that, but wow, yeah.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind.
Is that America's Funniest Home Video still on the air?
Oh, yes. Yeah. With Tom Bergeron.
No. It's the guy who played Carlton. Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yeah.
Oh, he's now the host.
Yeah. Bob Saget only hosted it for about 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah.
Then they had a rotating group. They had two people who did it for a while, Daisy Fuentes, and I can't remember his name. They've had a rotating cast. Then Tom Bergeron hosted it for, no joke, I think like 13 or 14
yeah.
years.
Yeah, he
forever.
Was there.
Yeah, might even been longer. But and then Alfonso Ribeiro,
Tom Bergeron, and these other people do the wacky sound effects that Bob Saget used to do when he hosted it.
I mean, they always had the noises in some cases, and Bergeron had a bunch of different sort of bits. They did like his Tom's Home Movies, where they'd put his face on people that were falling.
Oh yeah, that was the dumbest thing in the world.
They have joined the 21st century. There's now an AFV app. and you can record and directly upload to AFV, not YouTube. You can. Really? So you can just go, up. I thought this was funny. Here you go. But I can only imagine the junk they're getting.
But I can also imagine that in every house in America, there's a kid, there's a wiffle ball bat, there's a ball, and there's a dad with his crotch getting hit.
Yep.
Right?
Just about. Oh, yeah.
Bill, yes.
If you send that in, what are the chances that America's funniest home videos does not show that on television?
Yeah, they're going to use it.
They're going to use it every time. The crotch shot always gets on there.
Mm. And then the cute kids. Kid doing something adorable.
I didn't even know it was still on the air.
Yeah.
The night of the HBO series is coming to a finale this Sunday night. I can't say anything about it because Colin hasn't watched it. And
I know.
Neither has Dan and neither has Ian.
No.
Is it good?
It's great.
Okay. Well, that's...
It is a great, great series. And if you haven't been watching it, but you have HBO, go back and watch it on demand, the first 7 episodes, and catch up with this thing, because it is terrific. It's the story of a kid. He's a Pakistani kid, 21, 22 years old. He wants to go to a party on a Saturday night. He doesn't have transportation. His father is a cab driver in New York City, has a yellow cab. It's parked right outside of their house. The kid takes the father's keys, gets in the cab, starts driving from there to wherever this party is in New York City, gets lost because he doesn't really know his way around that well, and pulls up to a corner, and people think it's a yellow cab. I need to get somewhere. I'll just get in the back, and he'll take me. And he has to say, no, 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 no. I'm off duty. But he doesn't know how to turn on the off-duty light on the cab. Oh. And he gets 2 guys into the cab, and he gets them out. But then a young woman gets in the back. And things happen between them, and they end up back at her place, and in the very first episode, she ends up dead.
Yes.
In a very gruesome, bloody way. And the question is, did this kid do it, or did this kid not do it? And you see all of the process of what happens all along the way, from the first cops who come on the scene, to the director, the detective, whose name is Box, who's the actor's name I can't recall right now. He's a great character actor. He's very good. John Turturro plays this attorney who essentially works with the low life end of the spectrum when it comes to criminals. You know, people who get busted for breaking and entering or drugs or dealing drugs or that sort of stuff down at that end of the spectrum. He hands out business cards and has subway placards in New York that say, you pay no fee until you're free. You know, one of those kind of guys. Almost like a Saul Goodman kind of character. Uh-huh. But he's really, really good, and John Turturro is fantastic. I think it's the best thing John Turturro has ever done. And he ends up representing this kid, and then you see the process winding through. The kid ends up in Rikers, and...
Rikers that is being investigated currently for... barbaric prison practices.
The conditions there.
I doubt that they are exaggerating much of what goes on.
I think some of what we see in this movie was shot at Rikers.
Yeah.
In this series, rather, it is so realistic. Bill Camp plays Detective Box. My wife just texted me. Thank you. Because she's totally into the series as well. She loves detective stuff, and I love things like this. I'm a process guy. I want to see how they do that. How do they make the case? And they show both the prosecutor and the attorney, the defense attorney, sitting down with the information. And, okay, how do we make our case to convict this guy? How do we make our case to get this guy off? And meanwhile, you're seeing him in prison and dealing with the life there. And what's that like? It is so well done, and they get every detail right. And it comes to a head this Sunday night, and my wife and I have both agreed, we're not sure if we're going to find out that this kid, Nas, is guilty and will be convicted, or if he's not guilty and won't be convicted, or if he's not guilty and will be convicted, or if he is guilty and won't be convicted. We don't know which of those four it's going to be, because they don't telegraph these things ahead of time. And isn't that a 100-year-old phrase right there, telegraphing things?
Hung Jury, Season 2.
No.
I'm kidding.
No, the people who made this, Steve Zalian and Price, the guy who wrote Clockers, Richard Price, they made this series, and they said it is going to be 8 parts of one season. That's it. We're going to have one season, 8 episodes, and at that, it will be the end of this story. And as my wife says, I just hope they resolve it.
Yeah.
Don't leave things hanging at the end of this. We need to know which of those four possible outcomes it actually is. But they are talking about possibly doing a season two. They just don't know what that would be. It would not be these same characters.
Yeah.
Very much the same way Fargo changes characters.
True Detective. Hopefully it's not True Detective. Well, hopefully it's Fargo.
Yes. Fargo did it brilliantly for season two. Yes. True Detective ended the franchise for the bad season two. Speaking of which, Marcella, that series I told you about a couple of weeks ago, they just announced today that they're going to be making a season two for British TV, and after it airs there, it will be on Netflix sometime in 2017. So that's all the showbiz stuff I have. Do you have anything else?
I've got one quick thing. Amazon announced that they are rebooting, or they're creating a Jack Ryan series with John Krasinski from The Office. He played Jim. They're creating a series.
Jack Ryan, who's the character from Hunt for Red October and Spy Games.
And Patriot Games, I think is what
Patriot Games, right.
Yes, and Clear and Present Danger, Some of All Fears when it was Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
It's been played by Baldwin, Affleck, and
Harrison Ford
most memorably.
And also, what about Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit?
Oh, yeah, Chris Pine.
Is that the one with Chris Costner?
Yes, Kevin Costner. Right? Yeah.
Oh, that was a horrible movie.
He's making a lot of stinkers. Amazon now announced they are preparing to reboot The Departed into a series.
Ugh.
The movie The Departed. My reaction was exactly the same. Create something new.
Yeah.
Netflix is doing so many new things, and Amazon's like, oh, we could turn this movie into a show.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I am getting so sick of remakes and reboots and direct copies of one thing
into
another.
Which is why I'm so happy. I was so happy to see Sausage Party do so well. Brand new comedy, new idea entirely, and it did so well.
Mm-hmm.
That made me happy. Happy Time Murders is moving forward. If you're a longtime Jim Henson fan, Bill Cleveland, in 2008, he's got an alternative project that works on his studio, works on more mature things. Happy Time Murders is a bunch of puppets doing an investigation, a neo-noir investigation into a murder. It's a bunch, it's for adults, it's going to be a...
Are they Muppets?
They're Muppet, not the Muppets, but they are Muppets, like
hand-operated
Muppets investigating a murder. Happy Time Murders is finally moving forward after 8 years on the drawing board.
Happy and murders, not usually in the same sentence,
happy
right
time.
Next to each other.
Happy Time Murders.
One last showbiz related thing. Did you guys talk about Joey Fatone's restaurant story this week?
No.
Joey Fatone was a member of NSYNC.
Yes.
Right.
One of those boy bands. And he has a
singing bee. Host of the Singing Bee. Don't forget that.
What is the Singing Bee?
You remember that show?
Yes, I remember that show.
What was that?
It was essentially people singing karaoke.
No, it was just they had to sing along. You're right. It was they graded their quality of karaoke, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, girl.
Wow. Well, he's got a hot dog restaurant in a mall in Orlando, Florida. And the location is important to this story. Orlando, Florida. They were getting ready to have their grand opening a few days ago. And to celebrate their grand opening, they were going to have 6 large balloons that were going to be popped, because it's a celebration. We're going to pop these gigantic balloons, and then there are going to be alarms and things going off, and won't it be fun? You're in a mall in Orlando, which is still healing from the Pulse nightclub shooting of this summer, where dozens of people died. They did the test of this balloon-popping, alarm-sounding thing during the day, while thousands of people were at this mall.
Oh, man.
They didn't tell anyone they were testing, I'd be willing to bet.
Correct. Well, they say that they made an announcement over the mall PA system.
Which everyone listens to. Nobody, and is amazingly legible.
Nobody hears that. Here's what people hear. Pop, 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 pop. The popping of the balloons sounds like gunshot.
Oh.
They started a stampede, and several dozen people, including children and elderly, were run over in the stampede and hurt. They say it was absolutely mayhem. The fire and rescue officials had to show up. 9 people treated at the scene. 4 of them had to be hospitalized because somebody thought, how could we possibly harm anybody with the sound of popping balloons and fire alarms in a mall?
Wow.
And that's your showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.